Hello and welcome to another episode of the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we're here with longtime friend and chief medical officer of WebMD, Dr. John White. He is now the three-time author, congratulations, author, and his latest book is Take Control of Your Heart Disease Risk. And with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. White.
It is great to be with you again. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Now, this is the third book in a series of books that begin with take control of. At first it was cancer risk, then it was with diabetes, sugar control, and now it's heart disease. And in each of these books, you combine an understanding of the disease. So you provide the context around the disease itself, but you also put in a lot of practical advice. Talk to us a little bit about that balance between the disease and the practical advice on treating and dealing with that disease.
Yeah. And it, as you point out, it's really the leading causes of death that I wanted to focus on, you know, cancer and heart disease, and then also about the role of diabetes. And as you know, and you're a big proponent of, you know, better information leads to better health. That's what we say at WebMD. And I still see patients. So what I've learned is people are interested kind of in that pathophysiology, how does disease occur, what puts them at risk. But I'll tell you, what people say to me time and time again is, Dr. White, tell me what to do. What should I eat? What tests do I need? You know, how often should I get screened? What type of exercise is more important? And this is something that I've had to learn over the years, that you have to give practical advice. And you know, in earlier editions of previous books, I'd write a lot about, you know, the history of a disease. You know, diabetes is really fascinating, you know, how we learned about diabetes and the role of insulin. At the end of the day, people don't care so much about that, that they have the condition. What they want to know is, how do I get better? How do I prevent from getting this? So that's why I wanted to give these, you know, juicy nuggets, so to speak, of health advice. And sadly, a lot of doctors, my colleagues, either don't have the time, aren't interested, don't focus as much. Because I'll tell you, when you say to people, lose weight, eat healthy, what does that even mean? That doesn't give people actionable steps that they can take.
I like that, actionable steps. Because when you just start the book in an introduction, you are keen to discuss the patient-physician encounter, and you start off with this quotation, how's my heart, doc? Mm-hmm. And then you start going into a little bit about how you would communicate with the patient and also about how you try to help the patient understand what he or she is understanding themselves. So it's almost kind of where you're playing that role of communicator, but also somebody who's trying to get what the patient is thinking as well. How do you balance that?
Yeah. And you're a very good communicator, so you could answer this question. You always have great headlines and great titles. And, you know, that is what patients say to me. How's my heart? Especially when they're concerned about it. So part of good communication is about listening. What are patients asking me? What are they really asking me in terms of when they say, how's my heart? Do I have diabetes? They're concerned about something. So it's really that balance of listening to them, really trying to understand what's on their mind, and then really having a good conversation. Something I learned the other day, and I'm really fascinated by this, is instead of saying to patients or even to friends, how are you doing? Because people will just say, I'm fine. You know, it's really kind of almost perfunctory. How are you? I'm good. How are you? Good. And then you get to the point. But if I say to you, if we started this off and I'd say to you, how are you sleeping? We'd have a 10-minute conversation because people then will really tell you how they're sleeping and I'll get more at what's going on in their life. So it's really about learning how to be a good communicator. And the problem is a lot of doctors, a lot of people in general think they're good health communicators, and they're really not. It's a skill one has to learn and practice. So it's really something that I've been fine-tuning, honestly, over 20 years. And I like people. That helps, too. So I like talking to people. So maybe that's why I went in internal medicine. But that helps in the process.
Well said. I want to build upon that because I find that theme appearing over and over in the book. In chapter 4 in particular, you talk about depression and heart disease.
Yeah.
You even include a depression screening. It's a two-questionnaire mm-hmm. version of the depression screening, PHQ. I thought that was really fascinating how you wanted to combine those two and discuss that in your book. Is that part of the whole communication where you contextualize a question to get something that would be more meaningful to the patient?
That's right. And I have to give them the tools to be able to understand whether or not they might have depression. What I was really interested in that chapter and the one on stress is we don't think about the role of our emotions in terms of our health, in terms of our heart risk. You know, everyone knows about diet and exercise, but it also matters your stress level. It matters about your mood. And as we've talked about before, there's a mind-body connection. There is no physical health without mental health, and we kind of forget that. And when you're depressed, you don't want to eat healthy, you don't want to go to the doctor, you don't feel like exercising, but it's also a physiologic reason, the release of certain hormones, you know, serotonin, in terms of levels of norepinephrine and epinephrine and cortisol and inflammation. So there's a real physiologic reason in terms of how it impacts our blood vessels, our blood flow, how well our heart pumps. We don't think enough about that, and doctors don't talk enough about that. So that's why it was really important for me to put that in this book.
Yeah. There's one quotation that really stuck out. Said, lifestyle often trumps genetics, or at least lessens its impact. And I think by looking at different patient scenarios, you almost provide guidance for the different types of readers. In one patient scenario, you talk about the patient who wants to ignore what she's going through in terms of her health conditions. And then you have another scenario where the patient is overly assertive and asking for a certain test and what have you. As you're reading through these vignettes, are you also thinking in your mind, oh, this is one patient I see, or this is another type of patient I see? Is that the kind of mental play that's
absolutely
going through?
Yeah. And I've learned through the years, especially at my time at Discovery Channel, it's the power of storytelling. People will listen to that. Nobody wants a medical school lecture when they read a book or come into the doctor's office, unless you're a medical student. And even then, it could be iffy. But you'll really learn from the power of storytelling. And many of these stories, these patient stories, are composites of multiple patients. And I've kind of have brought kind of the classic things that I hear from people so they can say, you know what, I think like that. Or, hey, I see myself in that. And it's also, you know, to get their attention as well. I do that with quizzes, as you know, to kind of, you know, test your knowledge. People like that. But the power of storytelling is important because you know what you'll do? If I tell you you have diabetes, you're barely going to hear anything I say at that first appointment. But you know what you do? You look online, and then what do? You call someone that you know has diabetes, or someone whose family member has diabetes, and you ask them about it. And that's how you're going to learn as well. So I have to make sure that you have those good stories that are representative of the disease process.
Yeah, and that's definitely a strength of the book, going through these vignettes and really seeing myself in those patient contexts. Speaking of questions, there's one question that I really liked, and I want to pick your brain a little bit about it because I think it's instructive. At the beginning of chapter 3, you ask a question that has, among the answer choices, cholesterol, C-reactive protein, cardiac MRI imaging. So some of these are relatively technical terms, and some of these are terms that most people would understand. What's that balance you're navigating between providing information but not being too technical for the reader? Yeah.
I love that question because I'm trying to be less technical all the time. And it's a challenge because sometimes people will be like, people don't use those words, or, you know, I've never heard of that. But again, what I focused on is what people might have heard, right? So there's this controversy about cholesterol, and we've learned more about the role of genetics in terms of high cholesterol. C-reactive protein is something that's being advertised a lot about, a marker of disease, a non-specific marker. And then cardiac MRI, I've been getting that question lately. It's not widespread, but I also want to give people a heads up. So I'm trying to choose those topics that I think might be on people's minds. And I still see patients, and I feel that has made me a better writer in terms of, because I can build upon what people are actually asking me.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that theme. The clinical vignette, whether you're experiencing it or whether you're writing about it, has those same thought patterns. And it shows in the book as you're writing various contexts. One context that I thought was really interesting was your decision to talk about supplements and medications. And what was very interesting, and this really stuck out in my mind, you talk about the supplements before you talk about the medications. And it almost gives off the impression that raising awareness, or at least educating the reader and the patient about the harms or maybe some of the false promises of supplements, is probably in the realistic context a little more important than what medications to take and what their effectiveness would be.
And patients have a gazillion opportunities to talk about medications with their doctor. And medications in primary prevention before you've had a heart attack is different than in secondary prevention. And I didn't want to dismiss the importance of medications, but I felt like people have already had that opportunity quite a bit. And we have new data about the role of aspirin. So for supplements, and I worked at FDA, and I show I might be biased from the beginning in terms of my perspective. Yeah. I get asked about supplements almost every day in terms of, is there a magic pill? What do you think about garlic? That's been in the news lately because it's been advertised a lot. And really what I wanted to, you know, be practical. That's what people want to know. And where is there good data such as coenzyme Q, and where there's not so much data in terms of, you know, taking calcium or other supplements, and why? And I wanted to point out to people that supplements can have a impact on other medications, can have lots of other impacts on your body. And you shouldn't think just because it's over the counter and I can buy it without a prescription, that there's no potential harms. And I also don't want people to waste their money in terms of, is there really good data on multivitamins? Probably not for most people. And as you know, I focus a little more on spices. Like, instead of saying spend all the money on supplements, I'd rather folks explore spices. What frustrates me a little, and I'll be honest if I can with you for a minute, is, well, I'm honest the whole time, but particularly this is, a lot of times when people want to ask about supplements, it's kind of like, can I eat unhealthy? Right? Can I have that hamburger and French fries and have that Diet Coke so it'll zero it out and I'll have a supplement? Right. So, I have a gazillion people who don't like to eat fish. They don't want to try fish. And they'll be like, what about fish oil? Right.
Like, yeah.
Okay. But what about actually trying fish? What about having the other health benefits? A pill is never going to be the same as having a food in its natural form. But for some people, under some circumstances, especially for deficiencies, it can have value. But we're too quick to just listen to what any blogger said, and hey, maybe I should take, you know, these supplements that sometimes have very high doses of things. And you know, you have to make sure that they're manufactured well, they follow good quality standards. So it's not an absolute no. It's more one a note of caution. And I wanted to address it because that is what's always on people's minds.
Yeah, I think there's that ease factor where you could almost kind of shortcut whatever health decision you're making by taking medication or a pill, what have you. I thought that's a good segue to talk a little bit about what's in the appendix, where you have a lot of practical advice on various diets, including the spices, and various exercise regimens. Are you trying to tilt the scales in a sense where you're making it relatively easy for somebody going through the book to say, hey, this is my workout regimen, this is what I'm going to eat, this is how I'm going to plan my day? What's the thought process in going into so much detail on the various diets and exercise regimens?
It's what I've learned over the years that you mentioned at the beginning. People want practical advice. Tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me what to eat. Tell me how to exercise. And I've debated at times with the publisher where exactly they appear in the book. Sometimes they've been in the chapter, sometimes they've been at the end, but they've always been in there because I've learned that. And I always say this is a plan that you can try. And some people will say, and I've been like this, I'm going to eat the same thing for breakfast. I'm going to eat oatmeal or avocado toast every day, you know, for 3 months. And that's okay if that's what you like, yeah, and it's healthy. But then I also want to give you some potential other options. So by telling what you can do for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and a snack, you can see other choices and other options. And these are all things that I've made, I've eaten. In terms of the exercise program, people are often fearful to get started, right?
Yeah.
Living in the DC area, it's probably the same in some other places. I do have patients, I have it in the book, that'll say, I have to get in shape before I can go, yeah, to the gym. And I'm like, what? That doesn't even, yeah, make any sense. So you can start slow, because it can be, yeah, discouraging when you hear 150 minutes of exercise a week. Like, I can't do that. Who has that time? I'm not sure I do that every week. I know I don't. But you know what? You can start with 5 or 10 minutes,
yeah,
you know, a couple times a week. You can build up. You can think about high intensity interval. So here I have all this information. If I didn't include that diet and I didn't include the meal plan and the recipes and the exercise regimen, where do you leave patients for? You know, then what are they going to go do? So here's something that if you can follow this for 4 weeks, you're going to develop healthy habits that you can keep for a lifetime. So that's why it was so important for me to give people practical tips. And I did a lot of, you know, focus, yeah, groups before I, you know, published the diets. And I got great, you know, feedback in terms, wow, of what people are, you know, willing to do, what's realistic. I never like those meal plans that have a lot of exotic ingredients that most people aren't going to be able to get or too expensive. Like, I'm honest. I say to people,
yeah,
you know what? Buy frozen fruit, right? Because, yeah, a lot of times it can be expensive fruit that then goes to waste because it ripens too fast. But, you know, frozen as well as canned can be just as healthy, and it's going to be a better choice than always having potato, yeah, chips. I know nobody, yeah, ever likes to try hummus, but then when they do, they're like, oh, hey, this is really a great option. You have it with carrots and cucumbers, and it's so much tastier than it is with, you know, just having potato chips or yeah, pretzels.
Agreed. I think the simple, practical advice is usually the one that is most adhered to, mm-hmm, and I think your book does a great job exemplifying that. So let's say somebody has this book, and they're going through it. What are the ideal use cases? Is this a sit down from start to finish kind of book? Is this one where, you know, it's better suited to be in the kitchen alongside the patient when, mm-hmm, he or she is cooking? Talk to a little bit about how you envision, yeah, this book to be most effective.
I do view it as one that you'd read cover to cover over a period of, you know, days or weeks. But I think it's also something that can be used as a reference. How do I come back to it? I know people like to search online, but sometimes it's also great to have everything all in one place that you can go to. So you can go back to, like, hey, what are the tests that I want to talk to my doctor about that I should get? So, you know, let me look at that chapter. I use it in the kitchen when I'm making a recipe, so it can fit there. But it's a little bit of a reference guide as well. So how do I go back to it over time? I always like when people bring it in to me and they have it dog-eared, right? So they have bookmarked in the old-fashioned way as opposed, yep, to the digital age, and go back to it and be a resource. You know, I have the section about, you know, what questions should you ask your doctor, you know, about, yeah, medications that I really want people, you know, to come with. So that's really, you know, my interest in really having this as a reference material. You know, it's a nonfiction book, so it's not meant to be as, you know, a book I read and then I put on a bookshelf behind me and then never go back to it. But hopefully go back to it over time, talk about it, you know, with your healthcare provider.
Oh, nice. In the remaining time, I think this would be an interesting question. What was the best example of a patient of yours who, after reading the book, brought it in and had a particular question for you?
Yeah, you know, I will say on the diabetes book, I've had a, yeah, lot of back and forth. This book, you know, has recently come out, so people are starting to get familiar with it. But it's really been the role of tech in some ways, of continuous glucose monitoring and other ways, yeah, that they can measure their blood sugar. The best compliment, I'll tell you, that I've gotten from people is, yeah, they'll say to me, I can hear your voice in it. Because, yeah, I know he's a ghostwriter. They'll be like, I can hear it. It's like you're talking to me. And that's kind of, yeah, how I've written it. And I've heard from other people on the cancer book that they may not have gone for screening if they didn't mm-hmm. read what I wrote. Wow. And that really makes me feel good about that. Encourage them to go to the doctor and get checked out. And then, you know, I hear a lot about the recipes. People will give me their opinions, what they liked, what they didn't like. And I do like hearing that. Lately on the current book, I have this peanut butter and strawberry grilled toast. It only takes about 5 minutes. And I made it for breakfast. So I wanted to say it's not a lunch treat like a peanut butter and jelly, but it's peanut butter and strawberry. So peanut butter on preferably whole wheat toast, and you cut some strawberries, and then you just grill it, you know, like 2 minutes each side, and flip it. And it really is tasty, and it really does keep you full. And that's going to be a much better choice than some of these highly processed cereals.
That's great advice. And that's something I think I might try out myself. So
you'll have to let me know. So
I will. So with that, Dr. White, thank you so much for your time. For those listening, the link to purchase the book on Amazon is available at the bottom of the podcast screen. And I would encourage you to take a look at all of Dr. White's readings. The Take Control series is great advice for people who want to learn about their health but don't have the requisite medical background but have the willingness to learn. And with that, Dr. White, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. It's always great talking to you. And I really do appreciate your style, what you're communicating to people and in terms of good health information. So thanks for letting me be part of your healthcare communication strategies.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good day.